MX Network production.
A cerebral and experienced look into the racing action from the week that was. This is Industry Seating with Jason Thomas. Presented by Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Pro Glow Wash, Works Connection, Bass Foundry, TL Speed Shop, Concept Coatings Design Co., Grandstone Boots, and Fly Racing.
Welcome to the Industry Seating Podcast. My name is Jason Thomas, and we're a little late this week, but I did want to get a show in, and we'll kind of do a hybrid. We'll talk about certainly what happened last week in Seattle, and we'll also talk about what could happen or maybe should happen in St. Louis. So we'll touch on both. Thankfully, they're both 250 West rounds, so the content material stays relevant. But before we do that, let's thank the sponsors of this podcast. Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Pro Glow Wash, Concept Coatings Design Co. They're based in both Temecula, California and Perth, Australia. Anything you need for Cerakote, anodizing, things like that, please reach out to Concept Coatings Design Co. Works Connection, TL Speed Shop, Grantstone Boots, and of course, Fly Racing. Thank you to all of them for being a part of this. So let's circle back to Seattle for a second. What happened? Well, Levi Kitchen went off is what happened. Sorry, I was scrolling my notes here. He got off to the hole shot in both the heat race and the main event and really was uncontested. If you look at his day, no one was really close to him whatsoever. You know, the main event, Jordan was kind of back there. He's like 5 seconds back, you know, and I know the narrative because I help create it these days on television. Was this 20-second lead, right? And on paper, and really visually at the end of the race, it was stark. It was this huge lead. But before Jordan crashed, it wasn't that huge, right? And that's, to me, it's a little bit misleading. Yes, Levi dominated, and he deserves all the credit in the world. But I struggled with people going crazy with the 20-second lead. And I heard, you know, we do these shows throughout the week, and it was just such a overarching topic, but Jordan was only like 5 or 6 seconds back until he crashed. Now, if you want to talk about RJ, that's fair because RJ was way back there. And I had a chance to talk to RJ during the week and kind of figure out what was going on, why he was so far back. But I think the questions for Levi are, is this the new norm? Or was just this an outlier race, home race, where he was really feeling it. The track was super sketchy. Like, he got the start and was able to just execute and pull that big lead. We'll never know. You know, it's a lot of it's going to be opinion based on that. But my big takeaway was, you know, don't let one race get carried away, because we're going to go into a triple crown, and I think RJ will bounce back. You know, I don't know if Jordan will or not. You know, he's dealing with this lung issue. I think that Jordan hit his head. I could be wrong. You know, my immediate reaction to watching him on the ground on his motorcycle, I thought he hit his head. And I'm okay with being wrong, you know, and I don't like speculating. I'm not saying he had a concussion. I have no way of knowing that. I'm not a doctor, clearly. But the way he was acting, the things that he was doing on the racetrack, the lack of awareness that he had after he got back up, all pointed me towards that assumption. And that's all it is. It's an assumption. And I'm trying to be really careful with that because I don't want to say anything that's untrue. You know, that's not fair for me to do, but I'm just telling you what my eyes saw. And I think what most people assumed while the race was going on, and he crashed more than they even showed, like going over the finish line jump. He crashed there too. Like, his bike was high centered on the finish line, laid over, you know, at the checkered flag. So it was just a mess, really, after he got up. And usually that's because things aren't quite right. And I know he's dealing with I don't know the correct medical terminology because the doctor didn't share this information with me, but he had a lung issue, you know, when he hit the handlebar so hard. So we'll see if there are any residual effects from that this coming weekend. He has to be sore. You know, I don't think there's any way he could have some sort of real impact on his lungs and it not be carried over just a week later. So I don't know what to expect from Jordan. I think Levi will still have momentum. He's done really well in these Triple Crown events, and I think that RJ should bounce back because these Triple Crowns work well for him. And also remember, in 2022, RJ dominated this very race at a Triple Crown to get his first ever win. So there's a lot of converging storylines here, and I think it's really important for RJ to kind of steal some momentum back going into a break because they won't see each other again until Nashville for the showdown, because we're going to go into a weekend off, then we're going to go to Foxborough, and then we're going to go to Nashville. So 2 weekends off, 3 full weeks that these riders will have to think about things, practice, and trends feel like they become cemented when you have that much time off, because it becomes their nerve. You think about it too much, you know, the off days, when you're awake working with your trainer, your rider coach, whatever, you talk about it over and over and over. So it's really important for me to, for riders to have positive weekends and really leave these rounds where there's extended periods of time off on a positive note, because it's hard to change the narrative in those periods if you don't. You just, you know, like, if you think about like how football is, or even, you know, racing's obviously the same, but I'm trying to relate it to something some of you may have had experience with, or you hear in the media all the time, is if you had a really, have a really bad game, you can't wait to get back out there because you want to fix things or get, you know, turn things around or just right the wrong that may have gone on. And it was no different in my career. When I had a bad race, I wish we raced the next day. I wanted to get back out there and get that bad taste out of my mouth, for lack of a better term. And when you have this really long break for these 250 West guys we're about to go into, that's a tough thing because you can't get that bad taste out of your mouth. If you had a really bad round, it just sticks with you and lingers and festers, and that's tough, right? So I think this is a pivotal round for those guys, all three of those guys. I guess you could take Jordan out being so many points down, but at least for these two, of Levi and RJ, this is a really critical round when talking about championship momentum. Because you think about if Levi goes out and wins again, how confident he's going to be going in, not to mention he'll have at least a 10-point lead going into the final few rounds. And that's not impenetrable. We know that. But it would just feel like Levi kind of taking command of this championship. So a lot to let unfold there. But that's just kind of how I see it going as we get close to this break. Shimoda's the last rider I have notes on for the 250 guys. And, I mean, he's still Shimoda. You know, like, what are you going to do? Like, the riding is not the problem. You know, he's fast. I think he's good enough to win. But when you get bad starts, when you can't put the first laps together, when you crash in the main event, which he did all those things. In Seattle, how do you expect to beat those guys? You know, how do you expect to beat, especially Kitchen, who was just on rails and hitting every mark and doing all the things correctly? And, you know, RJ, it wasn't a great race for him. The start was not good, and he really didn't move up quickly enough, but he didn't make critical mistakes like Shimoda did. And so I'm sure Shimoda's frustrated. I'm sure Honda's kind of like, man, we gotta figure this out. We gotta be better than this, because the potential and our ceiling is much higher, and we're not executing. We're not maximizing our weekends. And it just feels like it's a broken record with Joe Shimoda. It really, really does. And it's probably such a dated reference, right? I think younger listeners are probably going, what the hell's a broken record? Well, a broken record, older listeners are going to be like, yeah, I know what a broken record is, idiot. But when a record's broken, it just plays the same loop, you know, over and over and over, the same 5 seconds or whatever, over and over. That's what it feels like is happening with Shimoda. He just does the same thing over and over. Bad start, bad first lap, mediocre result, or battles back. You know, he has 2 podiums on the year now, which he's capable of much more, but it's just the same loop, and he cannot break out of this cycle of doing the same thing. And I don't know what it's going to take to change it. I really don't. Maybe just later in the series, that seems to be the catalyst for him to break out of that, is just late in the championship when all the pressure's off and there's nothing to lose, then he's able to overcome it. And I don't know what to make of that. I don't know why that is. I tried to bring it up on the broadcast in Seattle of just asking the question to Ricky. Is like, what do you think is the reason for this? Like, you know, to fix a problem, I think you have to diagnose what the problem is and why the problem is happening, you know? And I don't have the answer to that. Maybe I could ask their team, you know, Lars Lindstrom or whoever, what they think is going on. And maybe I will. I think I should do that, because that would be a good report for the weekend, is exactly what's going on there. Getting into the 450s, we do our power rankings here, and I'll talk about, you know, both what happened and what I think will happen, as I mentioned off the top of the show. At number 10 is Hunter Lawrence, and he won a heat race. That was awesome. Like, you know, you could say rocks and crash. Sure, it's fair. But in the end, Hunter held off Sexton and Tomac and got the job done. Like, you know, there's really nothing else to take away from that. I don't remember if it was Webb in that heat. Maybe he was. I don't remember. But Hunter executed and won a heat race. Now, it's a first step, and he didn't really back it up in the main event. You know, there was nothing to really write home about after the main event. But, you know, you're just looking for signs of life from him, and it's been a rough first season for him. But I would push back on that talk and just say, this is what most rookie 450 seasons are like. And there are some in the media and friends of mine that we were battling last year and this offseason about what Hunter's first season would be like. And I'm not trying to say that I was right or take a victory lap by any means, but they were like, you know, Hunter, look at Hunter's 250 stats. He's like up there with the all-timers in 250s. He could come in and be a real player in 450s. And I'm like, okay, I understand. I don't agree with you though, because if you look at who he was racing against, you know, Jet left the series, and then you look at where he is coming into the 450 class, that's a big ask, right? Because look at the class going in, like Tomac, Sexton, Webb, his brother Jet, Jason Anderson, Roczen, Plessinger. That is brutal, absolutely brutal, to have to walk into a 450 class against those guys and find your place. And I didn't even name everybody, Justin Cooper, blah, blah, blah. My point was to these people and whoever they may be, is like, where do you see him fitting in? How do you think he's going to just jump to the top of that list? Because I don't see it. You know, can he fit in with some of them? Sure. But if you're going to tell me that he's going to immediately surpass the likes of Anderson, Roczen, whoever, even for top fives, I think that's a lot to ask of a rookie. And they would push back and say, okay, well, Jet is going to do it. And I'm like, yes, I guess that was the basis. The entire crux of my argument is that Hunter is not Jet. And that's, I think, what we argued about the most, was that I think there is a significant difference between Jet Lawrence and Hunter Lawrence. And they were using stats from 2023 to say that not really, right? If you look at Hunter's stats in 23, they were very, very similar to what Jet had been doing. And I understand what they're saying, but what happened when Jet and Hunter went head to head? Jet was the better guy. And look at what Jet did when he got on a 450. I don't think that's realistic expectation for Hunter. And it's played out in my favor, right? I'm not trying to take a victory lap here. It was just more of, I think that this season has been okay for Hunter. I think it's been all right. To be in the top 10 week in and week out is acceptable in your first year in the 450 class. Like, look at Christian Craig, right? Look at Justin Cooper. This is kind of what the bar is. This is acceptable behavior and acceptable results for Hunter. Now, if you wanted to say he's not outperforming and he's not blowing our expectations away and doing what Jet did, okay, but that's what I expected. So anyway, that's behind the scenes. That's kind of the back and forth, and there's been not arguing. It's just bench racing more than anything about what Hunter's career trajectory and first year would kind of look like. Number nine is Justin Cooper, and you know the only thing with him is it's just been so start dependent. You know, he can go the pace. We've seen him battle with the guys at the front. We've seen him go fast. Sexton, Webb, like he can go as fast as those guys. I don't know if it's an every week thing. I think it's close to that, but it is so much about the start with Justin Cooper. And that's just a personality and a race characteristic thing with him. He's always been a front runner. He's always been a guy that does well when he gets a good start. And I don't ever see that changing. Those are long seated, deep seated habits from Justin Cooper. So expect that to be the same. If he gets a good start, he feels confident and can go the pace. If he doesn't, he's not a guy that just moves through the pack. And never has been, probably never will be. So once, you know, you understand his MO and just the way he responds to races, you know, Michael Lessie was the same, Jeff Emig was the same. Those are things that are learned and developed and reinforced over years and years, decades even, of racing. And they're really hard to kind of change. And I don't know that it's even possible for most to kind of completely change the, you know, their personality as a racer. Number eight, Justin Barcia. He's not been the same guy. You know, I think that's fair to say. I don't know if it's the bike. I would guess it probably is. You know, he's been pretty vocal about saying that, you know, the changes that he was forced to make with the motorcycle have not really worked. I don't know if it's going to get better. You know, I know they've been trying the stuff that Sexton has been able to, the new fork change. I think they've been allowed to try. So maybe that's better. Maybe it'll show up on a normal track like St. Louis. But it's hard to say that 2024 has been a great year. It's impossible to say it's been a great year. It's hard to say it's even been a good year, really, for Barcia. So I'm sure he's frustrated. I think he's told the world that he's been frustrated. But he's expected to do a job, and he's got to be a professional, and he can't just blame the bike and the team for things. So, it's just an interesting thing for him to watch him manage it, manage the frustration, continually test and see if he can get better from there. Jason Anderson, seventh. Honestly, I don't really know what to say. It has not been good the last several weeks. It just hasn't, period. It has, you know, Indy wasn't great. Seattle wasn't great. You know, the Jason Anderson that we saw, like at Anaheim 2, San Diego, you could even argue some of it. That guy that wanted to, you know, obviously Anaheim 1. That guy, I don't know where he is. I don't know what happened to that guy. I don't know if it's a midseason lull, if he's, you know, he peaked too early, if they're struggling with the bike. I don't know. I don't have answers for you, but the results are not there. You know, and this sport is really graded on the result. You know, you can ride really well, but if the results sheet doesn't show something positive, does it really matter? You know, that's always the tough question. It's such a, I don't want to say it's pass fail, because you could get fourth and have a really good ride, and that's not a fail, but it is graded on the end result. And Anderson's been lacking those. You know, I know he's capable. We all know how fast he can go. And I really thought big things were coming from him when you watched how good he was in the early rounds, but he has not been able to follow through on that. So we'll see what the end of the season brings, but lots of question marks around Anderson for me right now. Number six is AP, and AP has been all right. You know, it hasn't been bad. Like, you look at that heat race in Seattle, he was ripping, right? So it's not been awful. I think the pace is still there. He's still capable. You just wonder if Webb and Jet and these guys start to separate themselves from the middle of the pack. The guys like AP, Anderson, Tomac, like, are they making a break? And we see that a lot in championship runs. The guys that are still championship relevant just really escalate their game, and they start to be the better guys by a pretty wide margin late in the season. And I don't know what causes that. Those guys just lock in and the other guys just kind of get disenchanted and start thinking about outdoors or what that is, but it is definitely a thing that goes on in these championships. And the contenders really rise up and everyone else kind of falls by the wayside. And it would be an interesting kind of psychological case study to see, because the gaps really start to widen for whatever reason. Just something that I've noticed over the years and something we've talked about. But I'm more interested in the why, because it's really almost impossible to argue that it happens. It's just, what causes that? It's got to be some sort of psychological break that happens between the front guys and the guys that are just kind of going through the motions late. At number five is Eli Tomac, and he's kind of in the rest with all these guys. And you have to point to the first lap positioning as the biggest catalyst. You know, I don't think it's always speed, right? If you look at time qualifying, he was really fast in the first session, you know? So it wasn't simply that he can't ride anymore. I don't believe that. But when you're so far back on the first lap, you know, the old Eli Tomac maybe could come through. The Eli Tomac we saw in Arlington maybe could come through the pack, but I think he's got to put himself in better positions in the early laps if he wants a chance at being on the podium or winning. And I don't know if that's an age thing. I don't know if that's, you know, the injury still, he's not his best self yet. You know, it's take your pick on reasons for that. But it's clear that it's very hard for him to harness that beast mode and start from anywhere and get to the front. He just seems, I don't want to say incapable because we saw it at Arlington, but it just seems very hard for him to find that. And to count on it just seems like it's not going to work. So anyway, if we saw Eli Tomac get a hole shot in one of these triple crowns and battle for the win, that would not surprise me. What would surprise me is him for start 12th and end up in top three. That's just something that we used to be able to count on from him. Even as incredulous as it was, he made it look effortless. He just had an ability to go faster and charge through. And he just doesn't seem like he can do that at will anymore. Not impossible, as I mentioned, Arlington, but he can't do it at will like he used to be able to do it. Again, want to thank the sponsors of this podcast, Pirelli Tires, Concept Coatings Design Co., Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding. Use that Concept 10 promo code at Concept Coatings Design Co. Save yourself some money there on anything that they offer. Works Connection, promo code is JT23. They have so many items, new products for the Stark Varg, lots of items for the new the 2024 Kawasaki. They have that new chain gauge tool. Check those guys out, worksconnection.com. ProGlow Wash, TL Speed Shop. Go to TLSpeedShop.com and you can get yourself a getaway side-by-side adventure, go to wine country, go to Baja, whatever you want. They drive trophy trucks. They have it all. So anything you'd ever want to do like that, it's you fly into Phoenix and it's plug and play from there. Really cool program they have. Grandstone Boots, thank you to them for always making me look sharp. What else? Guts Racing, they have so many products. E-bikes, power sports, custom graphics, seats for betas. They have all sorts of power sports products. Saran, everybody's so big on those Sarans now. They have all sorts of cool products for those too. And I forgot to mention Plum Creek Fundings. Really, don't refi. You know, like I laugh when Mathis mentions the refi thing on his podcast. This is not the time you want to refi. If you're refiing now, I don't know when you did your mortgage, maybe 1987. That's the only time and you would have your mortgage paid off, right? So I can't imagine a time where it would make a lot of sense to be doing a refi right now. But people are buying houses. That still happens. So reach out to Zach at Plum Creek Funding and get more information. And Fly Racing. That's where I work every day in the office. I won't be in the office very much this week. I'm going to Italy on Wednesday for MXGP. But check out flyracing.com at Fly Racing USA for all of our cool products. So the final four, number four is Roczen. And Roczen's looks sharp. You know, he had to go to the LCQ last weekend, which was pretty crazy. But I think his riding has been really good. You know, it's not every weekend is it good enough to win. Okay, cool. But, man, Indy was damn good. And then I just think he's been better longer this year than in past years. So, you know, the argument with Mathis and I over the years has been Steve says he can't win a championship. And I hate I hate saying can't, right? When he was so close to winning the title against Webb, like to say can't to me is crazy. I don't like to talk in absolutes like that, but I understand that it's tougher late in the season for him to be his best. Like, you know, if Steve, I guess it's the phrasing for me, but whatever, you know, Steve is, he likes to grab headlines and be a little sensational at times. So I kind of get it. He's probably not wrong in the end. Just can't for me is a tough one to wrap my head around for a guy who's been so relevant for so long. You know, like Jason Anderson won the title in 2018. I didn't, like, if you told me Jason Anderson was going to win a 450 title, I'd been like, yeah, right. So can't to me seems like a dangerous word, but yeah, whatever. He's been right so far. Number three, Eli Tomac. We kind of talked. Wait, why is Tomac three? No, I'm looking at the wrong list. Scratch that. I apologize. Let me get on the right list. Number three is Chase Sexton. That sounded really stupid. Chase Sexton is number three, and that was a really good ride for him. He was bummed after the race, and I like to look at these riders' body language, and when the camera's not on them yet, that's when you can kind of tell how they really feel about the race. And he was devastated. He was really, really bummed that he didn't win that race. You know, given more time, he gets on podium, he gets to think about it more. I think he kind of came around to understand that he rode really well and he shouldn't be so bummed on himself. I think he just knew that he let one get away there, right? The win was there. He led most of the race and he didn't end up getting the win, but he's been much better. And if you're looking for silver linings, like, he's improving. There's no other way to put it. Like, he looked better in Indy. He looked much better in Seattle. So whatever they're improving, the bike, him, the combination of both, it's happening. And is he 2023 Chase Sexton? I would argue no, he's not. You know, he doesn't have the raw speed he had. He doesn't look like he's able to push the envelope like he could. But he is getting better. And yeah, so don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Is he going to be champion this year? Probably not. But yeah, I mean, what else can you do but try to be better, you know, this week than you were last week? And I think he is doing that. And, you know, another way to judge this, I talked to Roger DeCoster after the race and he seemed happy with the performance. You know, he was in a good mood. And if, you know, Roger DeCoster is a very harsh critic. You know, he wants the win. He doesn't accept anything but excellence. And when he's happy with the effort and he seems satisfied, I think there's a lot to be taken from that. You know, and I would judge results off of the harshest critics. And did he win? No. But was he damn good? Yes. And I think there's something to be taken from that is if you know a guy doesn't suffer fools and he doesn't mince words, and he seems happy, then that's really enough. You know, that's enough to be kind of taken away. So good job, Sexton. Didn't win, but damn close. And it was a great effort all the way around. You know, the one thing I would say is maybe read the pit board. You know, that's a couple times now where I've asked him about stuff going on the pit board. And he's like, yeah, I didn't look. I didn't see it. I wasn't paying attention. So maybe there's something there. You know, maybe he could read the pit board and pick up on something, because I know for a fact, because Will reported that they were telling him to jump the wall. And I don't know, maybe he would have, maybe he wouldn't have, you know, maybe it screws him up. Maybe he stalls it like Jeff did there late in the race. Who knows? But it's hard for me to believe that there's nothing to be gained from ever reading the pit board. I don't personally believe that. And I know he could see it, because the way they exited that corner, they were right up against it. The mechanics are right on the exit of that corner, so it was right in his face. So it had to be a conscious decision for him to kind of not look, and maybe just wanted to stay extremely focused on what he was doing and didn't want any external input. But maybe also in this scenario, it cost him a little bit. So anyway, it was just something I kind of left with, like, man, maybe there was a, you know, maybe you win the race if you know to jump the sand and you do it earlier. Maybe you have this big lead that no one could touch, because Webb was absolutely killing him early in the race in that sand. And Jet 2, obviously Jet 2. You have to think Sexton was going a lot faster on other sections of the racetrack, if he was able to still stay in the lead and not jump the sand, I guess is the main point of all this. Number two, Cooper Webb. I mean, he's the king of outdueling, right? Like, if you get late into a race against Cooper Webb, you have to think he has the upper hand. And Jet is maybe the kryptonite to that. But everyone else, I think you have to point to Webb as saying he's probably going to get the job done. And he just is so crafty, and he's using his head so much in those battles. It's really hard to get a leg up on him and out-strategize him. And it's not raw speed. I always think that Webb knows where his competitor is going to go and where his competitor is going to be before they do. You think about where Sexton tried to make a move in the whoops, and then that left over, you go over the wall jump, that left and then right. Sexton's like, I got to find an angle here. Well, Webb already knew where he was going to be, right? Like, Webb goes inside in the left, protects there. And then Sexton tried a pretty tricky move, which I give him credit for trying, but he raced down, right? Like, really hard down the straightaway, pulled up next to Webb and tried to make Webb think that he was going to race to the berm, which would force Webb he's trying to induce or entice Webb to take Sexton deep and pinch him, like just kind of push him wide and run him out of racetrack. Now, Webb is counterbalancing that, and he knows, okay, all I have to do is stay side by side with Sexton. As long as I stay side by side with him, he can't pass me. Well, that's what Sexton wants him to think. So just, yeah, take me wide. Well, what Sexton wanted to do, and I apologize if I'm not explaining this well, what Sexton wanted Webb to do was take the bait and go deep with Sexton. Well, Sexton was going to lock up the brakes and immediately dive to the inside when Webb released his brakes to push wide. Well, Webb is so smart and so crafty in these situations, he just said, nope, I'm not buying it. I'm not taking the bait. I'm just going to go inside. I'm going to go hard inside no matter what you do, because if I do that and all I have to do is drift out on my exit, you can't do anything about that. You can go outside all you want. You can rail the berm. You can push deep. You can do whatever you want, but I'm going to beat you to the stripe because I don't have to jump the finish line. It doesn't matter what happens past that checkered flag. All I got to do is get there first. So if I go inside, it doesn't leave you a move. And it's really high level thinking and strategy. Sexton tried to set him up, tried to entice him to just push wide, because in that scenario it would also work. Webb could have, you know, lesser racers with less experience would say, okay, if he's going to push wide, all I have to do is go with him and then just block him. Just execute a really simple block pass. And you don't even really have to block pass. You just make sure that he can't ride around the outside of you. And to do that, all you have to do is just push him high and just ride around the corner. That's what Sexton was trying to get him to think. And then as soon as Webb, he felt him let off the brakes to go wide, he was going to walk up and just hook a right. As hard as he could, he was going to hook a right and go inside and try to pull the loop-de-loop there. Webb wasn't having it. It was brilliant, right? And it's just higher level race strategy, and the move, counter move that didn't work there was really interesting to kind of see it all unfold and to unpack it and take it layer by layer of what was he thinking? Okay, I know that you know that I know type stuff. It's just really interesting for me to see that stuff. So great job by Webb as usual, getting the job done late. Jet Lawrence is number one. Oh man, Jet, you should have won this one. I really believe that. And this is a learning moment. It really was, because if you think about what Jet had going for him, he was so much faster. And if you want to go back and look at laps 4, 6, and 7 for Jet Lawrence, he was absolutely dominating everyone. He was like a second and a half to 2 seconds faster than the leaders were. There was no doubt about who the fastest racers on the track were. It was undeniable. Like, the data is really clear. And if you were standing there watching the race, you'd be like, oh my God, Jet is coming so fast. He was nailing those rhythm sections. He was doing the you know, jumping the sand wall really cleanly, very easily. And yeah, to me, it was like, as long as Jet doesn't screw this up, he's going to win without a doubt. And that's what happened. Jet screwed up. And the point is, one day, Jet is going to learn that he could have been extremely patient there. And he was going so much faster. There was no reason to rush, right? He had such a speed edge. He didn't need to force a pass. He could have simply allowed his pace and his lines, like doing the, in the second rhythm section, triple, going triple, triple, triple. Things like that will just carry you past those guys. You don't even have to force it. You don't have to make a block pass. You don't have to put yourself in harm's way. Your lines are so much quicker, and the sections you're putting together are so much quicker. Let that do the hard work. You know, don't put yourself in a precarious spot. Just let your lines and your pace do your bidding. That's really all it comes down to. Instead, he goes in the sand, goes to the inside. I don't really know what he was trying to accomplish, right? Was he going to put a block pass in the sand side by side? Like, I don't really get it. And then, Will interviewed him. And on the podium, he says, you know, maybe I shouldn't have been so nice. Maybe, you know, I should have forced it more and made harder contact. And my initial and immediate and even 6 days later response is no, absolutely not. No, 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 no. That is exactly the wrong take. It should be the very opposite of that. You should be wanting to be less aggressive, not more. And, you know, it just speaks that he's got more to learn. He's got more maturing to do, because you assess the situation and say, okay, why would I need to be aggressive here? Why would I take any risk? If I'm this much faster, the only thing that can derail me here is being too aggressive, put myself in a bad spot, you know, open the door to something happening. Because if everything stays like this, there's nothing they can do about it. I'm going too fast for these guys. They won't be able to stop it. The only chance of me not winning is doing something silly, crashing, running into somebody, which is what he did. So why are you going to allow that to happen? Why are you going to even open the door to that chance? So I think when he's 23, 24, 25, he would look at that scenario so much differently. And it's easy for me standing on the side of the racetrack with a ton more experience of watching these races and being around this my whole life and seeing scenarios like that. It's easy for me with no adrenaline to say, this is what he should have done. I get it. I understand that. I'm not trying to be critical of him. I'm just saying that's where I think he's going to get to. That's the decision-making he will learn to make long-term. I think it's what Cooper Webb would do. I think it's what Eli Tomac would do. They would understand the only risk is the risk that they would take upon themselves. Like these riders in that race, Webb and Sexton, were not the risk. They weren't fast enough to be a real risk to you. You are the one that's in control of your fate because your pace is so great, right? Like, don't take yourself out of the race. You should be dominating. You should be riding the narrative because you're so much faster. And instead, he forced the issue. He went inside, he hits Webb in the swing arm, which has zero chance of success. You know, that's never going to work. And he knocks himself down, and there goes the race. So, to be that much faster and to have speed to burn is a great thing. But I just, more than anything, you know, Jet blew an opportunity. He could have taken the lead to 24 points instead of 16. That's a huge swing. And also, I think it just proves he has more to learn. You know, and he's leaving the door open a bit as well in the championship. And you can't discount that, right? We're all kind of handing this trophy to Jet, but maybe we shouldn't be so much. And yes, I do think Jet wins this title, but the longer you let people like Cooper Webb hang around, the more dangerous it becomes. You know, and you push the lead out to 24, you just have such more of a cushion and more margin for error here in these scenarios. And one bad thing happens, a first turn crash, a mechanical failure, a big crash, championship's wide open again. And the more you push those points out, the less you leave the door open to variables and variance and the unknown happening. You just start to remove the effectiveness or the, how damaging those scenarios can be. So it was just, yeah, it was a really big missed opportunity for Jet, and one I think that was totally preventable. And in the future, I think it's something that he will learn from. So anyway, that's it for this week. Jet is still the man. He just, we will want to say he has it all figured out and he's so mature, and most of the time he is. But these windows of missteps, I think, speak to where he's going to go and what the learning he still has to do. So thank you everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. I enjoyed doing it. Sorry it didn't come out earlier. We'll try to get next week's out before I leave for Italy. That's for damn sure. But yeah, enjoy it. Enjoy St. Louis, Triple Crown, all those good things, and we will talk to you soon. See ya.